Well, hello.
Hello, hello.
Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday.
Here we are on April 23rd, which is what? Is it Earth Day? Or no, yesterday was Earth Day. Happy belated Earth Day.
I feel like
to you.
Every day is Earth Day when you live on this planet.
Every day is Earth Day, but they've given Earth one day for us to really take it in, you know?
Yeah, ain't that a bitch.
Yeah. Earth gets one day. At least women get like a month, you know?
Yeah.
Others aren't as fortunate.
Right.
Like the Hispanic Heritage Month is only like, I think it's some weird thing, like 12 days or something.
Right.
It's
and then even Black like History gets the month. Shortest month of the year. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing. Well, how has your week been so far? How's everything going as we're wrapping up here? The end. We're almost at the end of April.
Yeah, it's good. Happy year anniversary of working together.
Is it really now?
Yeah, it's like right around this time, like maybe in a week. But like, yeah, this is.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was so fun.
Way to bury the lead. How has this year been for you? Hopefully not too painful.
Oh, no, no, no. It's been great. It's been such a joy. I love this podcast and I love doing all the things. And it's been such a great creative outlet. And I'm super grateful to be here.
Oh, good. Well, the feelings are mutual. We're lucky to have you. So thank you for bringing your vibrancy and your energy, even though sometimes you feel like a dark cloud.
Yeah, I definitely am a dark cloud. But hey, every dark cloud has a silver lining. This week has been good. I'm in prep for a lot of different projects that I'm working on, which is definitely stressful. I feel like prep is a little bit like running around like a chicken with your head cut off. Like, I feel like you don't like you have an idea of all the things that you need until, you know, you get into production and realize like, oh, why didn't we talk about this at all? So I have lots of qualms and I'm fingers crossed that everything works out. But I would love to pick your brain, as they say, on a few of those things.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a great topic for us to dive into in the do's and don'ts, how to of shorts. Like, there's so many questions around this all the time. People sometimes are doing their first shorts, sometimes they're going back to shorts. Like, I'm in the middle of putting a short together myself for one of my features. So as a proof of concept, so it feels like the short film hurdle and conversation is ongoing no matter what level of your career you're at. So yeah, I'm happy to provide any tips, do's and don'ts and tricks, if there are any to be provided. So, you know, but would love to just hear questions from you and where you're at in your process and maybe what are some bottlenecks that you've already been experiencing or challenges rather.
Yeah. So I'm in the middle of a couple of things right now. I'm in prep for a short that we're hoping to shoot this year. And then I'm also prepping for like the next 5 or 6 music videos that I have lined up that I'm directing, which is so much fun and is a lot less pressure than a short in terms of just time constraints. However, it's like there's a lot of similarities in terms of, you know, finding the funding, in terms of what crew you need, in terms of location scouts and you know, making sure that you have the crew that you need. And so I have an Indiegogo that went live yesterday for the music video, the first one that we're doing. And I, you know, kind of budgeted it out myself. And I picked, you know, based on, of course, the platform, that how much money they take, what percentage. I budgeted for about $7,000. And I was kind of unsure if that was too low or too high, because in my head, I was thinking, okay, we've already like done a little bit of a scout. Like, here's our dream location. We need to budget transportation. Here's like our ideal team and their rates. Like, here's, you know, we have, I already have the director, the DP, the editor, but, you know, we're going to need ideally an assistant camera team, a gaffer. We're going to need to rent equipment. So for me, I would love for you to just break down, like, if you are starting a new project, how does that budget look? What is your like template or mental process of like, all right, let's start here and flesh it out?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think the first thing, obviously, is script. I look at the script and then I look at the more like the most like baseline thing you can get from the script is how many locations, what are those locations, and how many people are talking. And then what's happening in the world, right? If we're talking about five people in a house talking, that's very doable. If it's in an apartment, if it's in a contained location that someone in the creative team probably owns or has access to, that's more palatable for you to keep your budget super low and put your resources towards some of the things that you mentioned. But if all of a sudden your short film is set on a yacht or at a mall or someplace that's like requires a lot of extras, or it's going to require some kind of conversation with the location that needs to maybe close, or you're going to have to go shoot, like maybe you get a restaurant for free, but now you have to go shoot like in the weird odd hours when they're closed. And that's not super fun, but you know, it's great if you get a free location. But then you have to populate that restaurant with people. So then you have a lot more background to fill that space depending on what you're doing. So it really comes down to like, even with features, it's not really that much different, but it's like, what is the creative? Who is the creative team? What access do they have to a lot of this infrastructure already? Because sometimes people are smart, right? And they'll write to things that they know. Oh, I know I have like a barn that I have access to from my uncle that we can use for free. So I wrote this for that barn. Great. Super smart. Visual location that's more stimulating than a house or an apartment. And that's why most people shoot things in houses or apartments, because they're easy access, right? But you want to be able to also look at the director. What is their creative vision for this? Like if you're talking about, typically shorts are, let's say, between 10 to 15 pages, right? Depending on what that context is of what you're shooting, you're looking at 1 to 2 days to shoot that properly and give yourself the time, producers, the creative team, the time to actually play, because you spend all this time raising money on, you know, crowdfunding for your budget, doing all of the things that are the prep, really important phase of the process, so you can get to the day and then make the thing and have fun making the thing. Crazy, right? So the last thing you want to do is go through all of that and rush and cram and try to do everything in like one day, unless, again, it's so contained that you can. And then so it starts with the director. What is their vision? How are they really going to execute this? How is their DP going to execute this? Are they bringing on a DP that understands the scope of the short film and the resources they'll have? Maybe it's a really seasoned DP who like has only been doing commercials and is just really hungry to get into narrative. So they're really great value add because they can bring in relationships with other crew that are going to come in for pennies, right? Just to be a part of something fun, because it's like 1 to 2 days, like no skin off their back. And they have relationships with vendors. They can get you better camera packages. They can get you, you know, the lighting and the genie that you're going to need, the grip and electric that you'll need. So those are really valuable adds to short film teams. It's not to say that people that are less experienced are not great value adds. It just depends on what are the resources that they can inherently also bring. So it takes the onus off of the producer to have to also then find and source a free camera or a low, you know, a low cost package. Sometimes DPs have their own gear. So like just being really smart about the team that you're building to execute the thing that you have like in front of you, right? And then the third one are your actors. Like, are you going to go after SAG actors? Are you going to go non-union? And again, there's no, either are both. Both are great paths. It depends on what it is that you're trying to do, right? Obviously, if you're dealing with SAG actors, there's an assumption that you're dealing with a more professional class of actors. Not that non-union actors aren't professional, but sometimes they have less experience. So when you're dealing with more professional actors, that means that you can move more quickly. You get more at-bats, you get more takes because they know camera, they know their angles, like they kind of have a better understanding of how to do their job effectively. And in fact, like a lot of people don't know this or may not know this, but SAG has a short film agreement that you can hire SAG actors of any kind and shoot with them, and you actually don't have to pay them. You can defer whatever their rate would be, and there is no minimum that you have to pay them as long as it's like, you know, minimum wage. But a lot of times you can defer, and that's for budgets up to $50,000. Once you cross over $50,000, that's a whole separate conversation that I don't want to detour into. But there is a way to do this, and it's very exciting because it opens up the door of possibilities for you as you're stepping into that short film. So those would be like the first big things that I look at as I'm going through and figuring out the project. And even if the director's like, you don't have a cast yet, but just having those conversations of like, well, who's your dream? You know, who is the on that A-list dream of who you want for these roles? And if they're like Meryl Streep and Robert De Niro, it's like, okay, a little bit of a reach. Like, how do we scale that back? You know, how do we find people that are a little bit more palatable. And oftentimes the way you can look at that, a really smart way to think about casting is to look at who are people that maybe are somewhat well known, especially in the television space, who typically play the same role over and over and maybe would be super stoked to get to do something completely separate from what they normally get pinged to do, right? Because if they're on a TV show, they're making pretty good money. So they're not coming to do your short because they need that exposure. It's probably because the role is super fun. It's super different. Something they haven't done before, like an actor's dream. And then, of course, they are going to want to meet with the team and feel confidence that the team is going to support them, right? Actors get afraid of like, oh, it's a new director. How are they going to make me look? How am I going to be treated on set? Is this producer going to have like the things that I need to do my job? That's the thinking that they're going into. But again, like having a list of people that maybe aren't as like big names, which is you don't really need big names for a short film. You need great performers who are invested in what you're creating and are going to show up and bring that enthusiasm and that professionalism every day because that's what's going to be captured on camera. That's a really smart way to think about it.
Something you said sparked my interest. When it comes to either vendors, like looking for, like if you're a producer, you need to find, you know, cheap equipment or you need to find a venue that you can shoot for free. Do you have tips on how to approach business owners or how to approach, you know, maybe a local equipment store with a proposal of like, hey, can we please get a discount? We are poor.
Yeah, I think you could. A restaurant is a good idea, right? Say you find a local restaurant and you go and you talk to the manager and you say, hey, we're looking to shoot for 6 hours at a restaurant. This is the scene. Is there a day that you guys have less business that could work for you for us to come in? And we can't pay you a location fee, but what we'll do is we'll cater our breakfast and lunch from your restaurant.
Oh.
Right. So you're saying, hey, like we can't, you know, we obviously can't pay you a location fee, but we'll buy food for everybody on the crew. And you're supporting students, you're supporting first-time filmmakers. And you just have to go and show face. You can't send emails. You could try phone calls, but just literally talking and them seeing that you're a genuine person who's trying to do something. Everyone started somewhere with whatever dreams they have for themselves. And some people really respond to that. And finding those people is key. If you don't have someone who's game, like, just don't bother. It's wasted energy. But with a restaurant, that's like one of the ways. If you think of a different business, it's like, is there something about that business that's inherent to the world of your short that could give them exposure? Maybe your short is set in like, it's a positive short, but let's say it's set in like a veterinarian's office. Like maybe you could talk to that vet and you could show their brand and you could, you know, that could help promote them if you're shooting in LA and it's a local thing. And the whole short is a beautiful short about, you know, a woman rescuing this dog and this love affair. Of course, if we're seeing the dog we euthanize, like no one's going to sign up for that, right? They just don't want that kind of bad press. But that's like out of the box thinking, which is why I think producing has to be so entrepreneurial of like, who do you know? Who do you know in your network that could introduce you to these people? And if you don't, how do you go and think, okay, how can we position this offer to someone in a way that makes them really compelled to want to help us when we don't have money to pay them? So that's like an easy example. With a restaurant, it's obviously easy because of that. But the same could be said for a coffee shop or for a bar. You could say, hey, we'll come and do like a wrap party here. Again, you don't have a ton of money to spend, but you'll say, we'll bring our friends, people will spend some money, you know? But that's why finding places that are hungry for that exposure are interesting versus obviously anything that's just like a hot ticket item won't really work in that same way.
So maybe like small independent businesses versus like large chains or...
Yeah, you don't want to mess with large chains. There's a lot of red tape and protocol. And the other part that's a big one that a lot of people... It's not sexy and it's not fun, but it's important is production insurance. A lot of these businesses would be willing to say, yeah, of course, we'll let you come and shoot for free, but can we just have a certificate of insurance saying that you are... ensuring our location if anything happens, if someone trips and now there's a workers' comp issue, it's not on the restaurant, right? The liability falls back on somebody. A lot of people don't shoot shorts with this. Understandably, insurance is expensive. But there are a lot of people who have like production companies, smaller production companies that you could talk to and say, hey, could we pay you like $100 to borrow your insurance because we're going to rent a camera, we're going to rent some lights, and we're going to need some certificates for like a truck and one location. It's very straightforward stuff. We're not doing stunts. We're not doing anything crazy. We just need that document that gives us the flexibility to have better access to making those deals, like you said, because any camera house that you call is going to want that, even if they're giving it to you for free.
Right. How much does production insurance usually run for, you know, something small?
Oh, I mean, the thing that sucks is that you can't really purchase production insurance. There's no such thing as like short-term production insurance that's like affordable. Like you can't go pay like a grand and get insured for like 5 days. It's either like you're getting insured for 3 to 6 months or you're getting an annual policy. They don't make it easy for you. So the goal is to find someone who has like a lot of independent producers who run commercials, for example, through their own companies, right? They have insurance for stuff like that. Even when I do my shorts, like I know my people that I can go to and go, hey, so-and-so, like, can we pay you X amount just to use your policy for this project? And we usually have some paperwork between us to say, hey, this LLC is giving my short film LLC, or you don't have to incorporate, but if there's some legal entity, the authority to use this for this amount, very finite period of time so that you can go off and do your production properly. I think even with like PeerSpace and some of those other ones, depending if you're renting places by the hour, they still sometimes require production insurance. And then what you give them is a certificate of insurance that is issued to that venue, to that space, that gives, you know, gives them the peace of mind that while you are a team with not a lot of money, you are coming at this with the right tools that you need to make anyone feel like, okay, these guys are above the fray, like they've got shit down. Now, if you're shooting at a park or if you're shooting somewhere else, you know, maybe not as necessary. Again, it really depends on the action of what you're doing in your scene. And parks are just as tricky. Like if you're really small footprint, probably no one will bother you. But if you're coming in and putting a lot of gear down and making it look like a whole set, you do need permission and permits to shoot at most public parks. And you don't want to be the person who's getting like shut down because you've got all of this stuff. Though there's always ways around it, but you just have to be really smart. That's why prep and scouting is so important, of knowing the limitations of these spaces so that you make plans accordingly to what you can do. Where is the line with what you can get away safely without having to have all that additional support?
Do you have any advice for finding funding when you don't have any big names attached to your project?
No, it is hard for everybody. I've said this before, but I actually think funding for shorts is harder than raising millions of dollars for a feature, because with features, there's a return on your investment. It's clear. Shorts don't make money for anybody. So it really is a goodwill. It's an investment in the filmmaker. It's believing in the team. It's a donation, frankly. It really is. No one's going to get that money back, which is why most filmmakers save their money and or raise money from friends and family, because those are the first people, right, that believe in them enough to give them $5, $10 or whatever towards a campaign. So there's a myriad of grants. We all know about them. And those are very consuming to do. And once you have like the basics down of your application, it's sort of like copy paste. So some, of course, have like nuances and variances, but it's good practice, especially if you're not on any like rigid timeline. But that's why, like, you know, with Coco Franchini, who came on the show and like talking about the proof of concept accelerator grant, even for her at her level, like she sees this struggle for women, especially to even get $50,000 to go make a short film that could go on and become, you know, a great feature. And when I saw her for coffees a month or two after recording, she was telling me that she was shocked at the caliber and level of filmmakers that had been applying with their second or third project because they had done a feature years ago and can't get their second thing off the ground. Not to depress anybody, but that's what I'm saying. Like, whether you're starting out, this is your first thing, or you're a more established filmmaker trying to now maybe pivot or show some other shade of your talent, like it's kind of struggle city for everyone. So I think you just have to be really smart and creative. You do the grants, you do the crowdfunding, but there are fundraisers you can do. Are there events you can put together that are no cost to you where you get to pocket all that money to put towards the short? There's just all kinds of ways nowadays with the internet, but you have to be really, really scrappy and thrifty and like entrepreneurial. I said that before, but you really do. And it is a ton of work. It's a ton of work. That's why I say, make sure that you're building a plan that gives you enough time to make the best version of that short, because getting to that starting line is a lot of work. And you don't want to look back and go, man, like that extra $5,000 would have made a world of difference. That extra shooting day would have made this like go from good to like undeniable, you know?
Mm-hmm. So I guess my last question would be, once the short is done, like, who is, like, you mentioned, like, you know, obviously having proof of concepts, but who is Carolina sending that to? Like, what are you doing with the short once it's done?
Yeah, I mean, most people make shorts to go to festivals. They want exposure, right? So once the short is done, and this is another big one, a lot of people don't think about post in their shorts. They think about the editor, but they don't think about music, color, sound mix, all these things that make a short really go from, like, sort of amateur hour to sounding and feeling really like a well-made piece of content, you know, that can launch somebody. But that's what I typically do. And a lot of times, you know, we'll look at the calendar so we know, okay, well, Sundance acceptance for shorts, I believe, is like September is like the latest deadline. So how do you create a production plan that works backwards from that so that you can have a cut of the film that feels pretty good by August? So that means you want to be shooting right now, right? Like, that's the ideal timeline, you know. And with shorts, again, if you get the money, it's 2 days, and like, it's not going to be months of edit. Like, you can knock it out in like a month if you had to, if you have the right team. But that's typically what we're doing. We're looking at, okay, well, where can we submit this to get the most exposure? There's no shortage of short films, but of course you go for the gold standard, the marquee ones. And then you have all the other festivals that are just as great, that are not as like big, but still great exposure for the short. And that's the first line of defense of what you do. But simultaneously, for me at this stage, I would be using that short to run two parallel paths. I'm sending it out to festivals, trying to get that exposure. But because with this particular short I'm talking about, we already have a feature film script that is doing well and people are really responding to the project, we're sort of simultaneously casting that. I would use that short film as part of the submission package for the feature to financiers, to actors, to whomever, to say, hey, this is a first-time filmmaker, but we just completed this short. It's so fresh. We're still submitting it to festivals, but here you can see what this filmmaker is capable of doing, and the tone and the themes that are in this short are what we're going to explore in the feature as well.
Is it ethically murky to, like, recast from like a short to the feature version, or is that kind of par for the course?
Not at all. Not at all. And I think that, you know, you just have to have those clear expectations. But, you know, people go into shorts fully intending to say, hey, I want to find my team. And if this is the team, I'd love to bring them onto the feature. If you get a somewhat name, like I said, this TV actor who decides to come to your short, potentially you could bring him onto the feature. But oftentimes what happens is that a financier who's like, we love this, but the person you cast in your short carries no value internationally. We need to recast, right? We want someone who has more of a name. That's where those conversations tend to happen. It's not that they want to poo-poo or negate the other actors who were in that short, unless, you know, you go make like Whiplash and the short film already has J.K. Simmons. Okay, that's different. But even with that short, like, the main actor of that short did not go on to do the feature film. So that's a very common thing. Now, with our particular example, I will say our short film is more of a tonal proof of concept than a story, like one for one. So even the characters in the short don't exist in the feature. So the two roles that we're, you know, going to be sharing, these are not roles that would be in the feature, because if they were, those actors would likely go on to do the feature with us. And the reason for that for us is because our film takes place over the course of a night in a gas station, and that would be a much harder fundraising and prep plan for a short film. So we were like, well, how do we take the themes that we're going to explore in the feature, but set them in a house, because that's easier to find, right? And it's, oh, happens again. It's still the same premise over the course of a night. There's some illegal activity. This person commits a crime. They basically break into this person's house. But now the world of the short just lives in this home versus now us having to build and find and, you know, set design a gas station that feels and looks compelling from a production design standpoint, you know?
Right.
So that was for us what was palatable. But even with that, two actors in a house talking, like, it's still more money than I think the rest of the team was really anticipating having to raise to do it right, because of post, because of festival fees. Like, are you putting that in your budget? Like, you don't have to, but then are you cool coming out of pocket with all those fees that could add up to hundreds of dollars, you know?
Yeah.
So things to think about. But the one thing I'll say is there's multiple ways to do all of this. And so if you have $5,000 and you just want to go flex your muscle and you have the people that you feel good about working with and you know you're going to be safe and you're just going to shoot it at a buddy's house or whatever, go do that. There's still value in doing that and practicing that muscle, especially as a producer and understanding what $5,000 gets you and how to rally a team. All of that stuff is the same essence, no matter how big you scale. So I would never tell someone to not shoot something because they don't have $50,000. It's just go in with truly understanding your own expectations about what that experience is going to be like and what the outcome will be so that you don't go in thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to make a short for $5,000 and it's going to look like it was done for $50 and it's going to blow the lids off of everyone's, you know, hats. That could happen because it's Hollywood and there's unicorns, of course. But statistically speaking, it may not. And that's okay. Like, the one fallacy I think most people don't realize is a lot of the filmmakers who finally get their shorts at Sundance or, you know, at Toronto or wherever, that's not their first short. That's like their 10th short. And everyone thinks, oh my God, that's like their debut. And it's like, no, there's been so much crap that they've made and they've learned. They've just never shared it with people publicly, you know, and that's part of the process too. So it's important to give yourself grace as a producer as well, because you're learning and growing with each project and each team.
Wow. Thank you so much. This is all very, very, very helpful. It makes me feel a little bit better.
Yeah. Of course. I'm glad it helped. You know, there's a lot to unpack. So, but those are some like sort of macro brass tacks kinds of things that are important to think about. So I hope it helps.
It does.
Okay, great. Well, for those of you listening, what are your thoughts on all of this? Does this make sense? Does this track with you? Do you have questions for us? A little deeper dive into any of these, feel free to hit us on social media. I'm happy to answer any more specific questions or regarding short films and prep and budgeting and production and post and all the fun things. And I'm sure Sarah also will have a wealth of knowledge on the other side of when she makes this project.
Yeah, I'll be full of here's what not to do.
And that is so valuable, truly. It really is. It really, really is. Make sure also you have support for yourself. You know, if you have someone who can come and be a shadow for you, work closely with you, you're not totally alone, and that you take care of yourself. That's really important.
I will make sure I have a team, a good team.
Good. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in. If you guys don't already subscribe to the podcast or the newsletter, please do. It's on our Instagram. You can find all the links through the link there. We have a link tree with everything. And of course, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the Patreon. If you are in a position to contribute, please sign up and join us. We do some fun things, and it would be great to have your support to keep the show going. So thanks for listening. Thank you for coming on and having great questions.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Well, everyone have a great rest of your day and a great week ahead.